It is my pleasure to introduce you to today's presenter, Mr. Adam Turris. He's a certified advanced cold fusion MX7 developer with productivity enhancement. Adam, the session is all yours.
Thank you very much, Miriam. Hello, everybody. Glad you could join us. One little correction here is the email address down here. If you want to get a hold of me, it's instead of registration at coldfusiontraining.com, it's probably best for you to contact me at adam@productivityenhancement.com. But other than that, let's go ahead and get started. What we're going to cover today is basically we're going to go from the high-level discussion of the differences between ColdFusion and ASP.NET 2.0 that we had yesterday to actually building an application. All right, so one thing that I did want to mention is that I've kind of timed this thing out, and even with doing the cut and paste that I'm going to be doing to speed things up, this might run a little bit over the hour, but I'm going to try to go rapidly without rushing too much, so let me know with your feedback if I'm going too fast, okay? So, like most time-limited presentations, I reduced this code example to the bare minimum mechanisms that are necessary to show you how things work. Otherwise, the code gets so long you can't really easily follow it. But for the benefit of those who weren't in yesterday's webcast, here's the let me go ahead and share this thing here. This is my sharing frame. Here's the Nile.com. Let me go back over here real quick. Here's the Nile.com website that's done in ColdFusion, and it's a very basic application that allows you to add, edit, and delete records in the book database. It also has a catalog that you can go shopping, and you can add to a cart. And it's very, very rudimentary, but the principles behind it are the same that you would use in most production level apps, except for really the shopping cart. It's really very limited for what it does. The ASP.NET 2.0 version of this site is going to have the exact same features and functionality, and I'm going to compare both the approach and the code that's used for each, so you'll be able to contrast and compare what you're doing now in ColdFusion with the way you might do it in ASP.NET 2.0 using C Sharp. So let's start with the home page of each site. Okay. All right, so here's the index.cfm. It's very straightforward. And here's the index.cfm, and basically all I'm doing is I'm taking a header and a footer and wrapping the page and putting a little content in there, and all the header and footer are the graphical treatment that I've created for the site split down the middle. And so that's just how I wrap the page. Now, in ASP.NET 2.0, we have something even better called master pages. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to create a master page here. The style sheet that I'm using is identical for both sites, exact same style sheet. And all I'm doing is basically just styling the body and heading one and relatively positioning the different divs that I'm going to use. All right, so let's go ahead and create a master page. Just right-click and say add new item, master page, and I'm going to call this one default master page. All right, I'm using C Sharp as the language, as I mentioned before, and here's the basic master page. Now, what this thing basically does, except for the declaration at the top, it's mostly pretty much standard HTML, except for the that and the run at server that you see in various places. It's pretty much HTML. Here's the one place where it's decidedly ASP.NET. This is basically a content placeholder in the master page with an ID of content placeholder 1. And what's going to happen is the page, any of the pages that use this master page are going to inject their content into the any of the placeholders that are in the master page. Okay? So what I'm going to do now is I'm just going to give the div that contains this placeholder an ID, so my rules for the cascading style sheet will apply. And I'm going to go ahead just to save some time and take some of the other markups. You don't have to be suffering through my typing skills here. And paste this stuff in. There's my style sheet. And here is the other stuff that's similar to what you saw in ColdFusion. The other divs is my navigation there, and the footer. Just paste these guys in. So basically, it's the same. It's the same thing here, and I've got IDs for the different divs. So the cascading styles will apply. And so I'll go ahead and just save that. Okay, and I'm also using a slightly different graphic. All right, now a couple other things. You'll notice that there's a tilde slash that you don't get in ColdFusion here. That tilde slash, along with the run at server, tells ASP.NET to process that into whatever the root of the application is at the current protocol that's being used at the time. So any of your links, even if they're just like style sheet links or image links like you have down here, what you can do is you can add that tilde slash and a run at server to it and have ASP.NET process that for you. Okay? So there's the master page. Let's go ahead and take a look at the existing home page that gets created by default with every ASP.NET application. Very, very straightforward. There's nothing in it almost. ASP.NET, you have one form for each page, and that's what you're limited to. By default, the default page that comes with a new solution that you create in Visual Studio 2005 has its own form, and because it doesn't use a master page. And what we're going to do is I'm going to show you how much simpler this looks when you use master pages. So I'm going to go ahead and delete this default page, and I'm going to go ahead and add a new one. So I'll just say add new item, web form, default. I'm going to tell it to select the master page here. And since I only have one master page that's been defined, it gives me that selection. If I had 15 master pages, they would give me all of them there. It's one of the first times when you begin to notice that Visual Studio 2005 really does a lot of the work for you. Whenever you have a choice of something, it likes to narrow things down to only those things that you can choose. So I'll choose that default master page, and here you go. Here's my new default. You have the same declaration line up here, except there's a couple things in here that does. First of all, it tells you that you're using this master page file as the default master page we created. And then all it needs to do is, and I can get rid of all the HTML markup, all it has to do is say, here's a content tag that's targeting the content placeholder ID of content placeholder 1 that we had back in the master page. Okay? All right, so let's see how these things match up. I'm going to go back into default, and I'll just put a little content in here. WelcomeDenial.com. And the other really huge online bookstore. And all right, so I'll just save that and I'll do a Control F5 to run it. It's going to compile up and there you go. Okay, so using master pages is actually, it's extremely simple. Like I said, you can create as many master pages as you want for your site, and just whenever you create a new web form, it asks you, which one do you want to choose? Just choose it, and it'll automatically create all the content items on that page that you need to merge up with your master page. Okay, so let's go ahead, and enough with this basic stuff here, let's go ahead and, go back to the sharing frame here. And let's go back and create an actual dynamic page. It has dynamic data in it. So let me close these guys. And what we're going to do is go ahead and create the list of books that we're going to use in our administration side of the site. So I'm going to go ahead and make a new folder and called it admin. And I'm going to go ahead and add a new item, another web form. I'm going to call this one book list. Okay, select the master page that I have, and same thing you've seen before. Let me go over into design mode this time, and you can see that the master page up here is showing most of the markup there. And so what I'm going to do now is I'm going to go ahead and before I do anything with this, let me go back into home site and show you the equivalent in ColdFusion of what we're going to build. Okay, this is the equivalent of the booklist.cfm that I have over here. And yeah, I know I haven't pulled all the heavy lifting out into component methods, but a lot of people still do it this way, is I'm running a query at the top of the page, and then I'm basically outputting the query as you're all used to doing a thousand times a day for the list. Now, get an idea of this, is that you really are just kind of mishmashing together markup and data. is what we're all used to in cold fusion. It is quite different in ASP.NET. What I'm going to do here is I'm going to actually use the data mining that is used in ASP.NET 2.0 to make this a very short task. I'm going to drag a grid view control onto this book list that I've created. And the first thing that you'll notice is that it pops up this smart tag that gives me everything that I need to get started here. Okay? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and bind this over to some data. So I'll choose new data source, and I'm going to take this from the database. I'm just going to call the name of this source as a book table. And I don't have a connection yet. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to make a new connection, and I'll take it from one of our servers here in the load testing lab. Okay. And I'll use the ever popular SA and password, a little percent sign after it. And I'll choose the Nile.com database that I have here. And let's go ahead and test the connection. Everything succeeded. So now I have a connection. Now, the connection is going to manifest itself as a connection string that if I go next, it's going to say, hey, you don't have any configuration file available in your system. You want me to go ahead and save this for you? And since I'm calling the connection Nile.com, it's suggesting we call this Nile.com connection string. I'll go ahead and choose that, click next. And from there, I can choose what kind of data I want to bind this to. So let me choose this from the book table, and I'll just choose these columns. I hate doing select star, so let's choose those explicitly. And I'll tell it to order by title, and go next, test the query, everything looks fine, click finish, and bada bing. If I do Control F5 at this point, let it compile it up, then you should see, wrong one. Sorry guys, I'll get used to this in just a second. Yeah, there we went. Hold on just a moment. There we go. Okay. Does everybody see it okay? All right, so basically this is that's what it took to put a grid view control onto this form and just wire it up to data, and there you go. So let's see. Let me go back into here for a moment and all right, let's take a look at the web.config, what it created. This is part of the .NET framework that of the ASP.NET framework, rather, application framework. The web.config contains all of the configuration strings and all of the configuration information for your ASP.NET 2.0 application. So what you're looking at here, this connection string that it created in the wizard earlier, this is kind of the equivalent in Cold Fusion of the information that you would pass in a CF query tag for the data source name, username, password. And since it's now in the web.config file that it automatically created for me, it's available throughout my application. Another thing that web.config is good for is you can add your own key value pairs to this, which would be the equivalent of sending, say, an application scope or request scope variable in Cold Fusion to hold things like the whole constant values that you would use throughout your application, like the path to certain, say, document directories and things like that you want to interact with a CF file, things like that. So, okay. All right. So I'm just going to go ahead and play around with this grid view for, control for a minute and give you an idea of some of the things that you can do. All right. So I'm going to go back into my data source here, and I'm going to go ahead and click Advanced. I'm going to tell it that I want Visual Studio to automatically generate insert, update, and delete statements. And then from there, once I do that, you'll notice that my smart tag expands out, and I can do things like enable editing and enable deleting. I can also enable sorting and paging. It's kind of cool. And just by going into my properties for this grid view control, if I change my page size to, say, something small like 4, we only have about 10 rows in the database, so I can show you paging. As soon as I do that and hit Control F5, well, here you go. Look at the grid view now. So I have paging. And I can toggle the sort by simply clicking on the headings here. Another thing that's kind of cool, you can do in-place editing. So if I want to reduce the price of this book by a couple of cents. You can do deleting directly from the data grid. All this is done just by changing a few properties in the grid view control. So, I mean, how long would this normally take you to do in ColdFusion? I mean, for being able to do in-place editing in a grid, if you have people that do a lot of updates in one fell swoop, it's better to do something like that than have individual forms. So, all right. And let me show you how some of this magic works. If you take a look over here, when I set all of this up and I bound this to data, it automatically knew in my database that the ISBN column in my book, in that book table, was the primary key. So it even went ahead and wired up to for this grid view control and told it that whenever you're doing something like passing a reference to edit something or update something, use this as the key value. So all that work is done for me. Okay. All right. So all that's built right into the web control. Okay, now the third webcast that we're doing tomorrow is on reusability, and you're going to see how we re-architect this site using a layer of objects between the presentation and data, and how easily it is to rewire these controls to use those object methods instead of going directly to the database. Okay. And ASP.NET and Visual Studio 2005 really make it easier than any other platform that I've worked with to make a solid business object layer and then build a solid user interface on top of it. Okay, so let me just remove those features that I put in here before. Let me go ahead and take these guys back out. And not do that anymore. And everything should go back to the way it was. Yeah, that's the way it was before. So, okay. Okay, so this book type ID really doesn't mean a whole lot to me. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and change that to the actual book name. Just so you know, let me give you an idea of what we're looking at here. Here's the database schema that we're working with. You can't really see it too well in the slide that I had. So this is the database schema. It's simply the book table is what we're interacting with, and book type is simply a related parent table that allows us to display the actual book type name. Okay, so. Keep going out of the sharing frame. Sorry about that. All right. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go back in here, and I just want to show you how easy this is, reconfigure the data source. And instead of taking it directly from tables in the database, I'm going to specify that I want to use a custom SQL statement. Just click Next. And I typically hate to use query builders. I'm kind of a snob. But the one that's in Visual Studio 2005 is actually pretty useful. So let's have a little GUI fun here, shall we? We'll go ahead and add the book type table to this. And instead of using the book type ID, I'll take the book type name from here. And voila. And you'll notice that it uses ANSI 92 syntax in the joins. That's kind of nice. Okay, so click Next, test the query. There's the names that we need. Click Finish. And since I changed the data source, changed the nature of the data source, it's going to ask me, do I want to clear the configuration of columns in the grid view? I'm going to say no, because I want to show you how you can configure that manually. Okay, so I'm going to click in Edit Columns, and here are all the bound columns that I had before. And I don't need that book type anymore, a book type ID anymore, but I do want the book type name. And to make this prettied up a bit, I'm instead of calling book type name as the header text, I'll just say type, and click that, and bada bing. So, and this is pretty impressive as far as I'm concerned. If you're worried about the way that this thing looks, don't be. Let me give you an idea of some of the things that you can do here. If you take a look down below at the way that styles work, there are all kinds of things that you can do styling this. I like to create external cascading style sheets and then just name whatever class is being used for these particular items. And you can style these things any way that you want. You can just slip in a new style sheet with the same names in them and just have it restyle the entire look and feel of the entire site. So there's a lot of control that you have over the look and feel on this. Now, auto-generate fields, what that does, it's kind of a quick and dirty method of saying, okay, I bound this control to this other data set over here. Take all the columns in that data set, make the header text the name of the column in the database, and then display every one of those columns. So if you, I typically don't do that. I like to be very specific about what I show in the header text and so forth, but it at least is available for you there. Okay. All right. Now I'm going to go ahead and add a parameterized delete statement so I can add deleting to this grid control. So go into my smart tag and configure the data source. And over to my statements here. All right, so for my delete statement, what I'm going to do is I'm going to say delete from book where ISBN equals at ISBN. Use a parameter there. Okay. And now that I have something in my delete statement, the smart tag automatically gives me the ability to enable deleting. So if I click that, it adds the delete command column, but I want to move that over to the right. So I'm going to go ahead and edit that and move that down to the last. And there we go. So now what I should be able to do is delete directly out of the grid control. And I mean, that's one of my favorite things. All right. So hopefully that looks pretty straightforward to everybody. And let's go ahead and build an insert form. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and add a new item here, a web form called book add. Choose the master page. Go over to design view. Okay. And now what I need to do is I need to, let me go ahead and I'm going to pin my toolbox out here. I need to go ahead and add labels for all of my controls are going to be here. So this one, I'll have the text of that be ISBN. And I'll have another one out here. That up here. Label that be title. I didn't say it would be exciting. So, authors. Price. And type. Let me go ahead and grab these guys. Let's see, let me make one of them here. And make it about like that. Grab these other guys. And make them all the same width. Whoop. Here, wait a minute. I'll just do it this way. Oops. Give me a hard time here today. It's giving me a real hard time today. Sorry about that. Okay. I'm going to eyeball them. All right. Now I'm going to go ahead and I need a button to be able to add this thing. So I'm going to go ahead and add a button. And I'm going to go ahead and change the name of this button to BTN add. And I'll also go ahead and change the name or the text of the button over to add. Now, I'm going to go ahead and use text boxes for all of the controls except for type, which is going to be a drop-down list. So let me go ahead and drag some text boxes out here. And this one's going to be TXT ISBN. And this one's going to be TXT title. TXT authors. TXT price. And okay. Now for the drop-down list, so you're going to like this. I'm going to go ahead and bind that control to another data set and make it very easy. I'm going to go ahead and drag this drop-down list out here. And just my smart tag appears. I'll click Choose Data Source. And so I'll make a new data source, take it right out of the database. I'll make this one the book type table. And I'll choose the connection string that has already been created for me earlier. Pull that right out of the web.config. And this one I'm going to take out of the book type table, the ID and name. And I'm going to order that by the name and test the query. There it is. And all I have to do now is say which am I using for the value and which am I using for the name or for the display. So For the display, I'll use name. For the value, I'll use ID. And basically, that part's done. Let me just give you an idea. Okay, so there it is. Pretty neat. All right. So now you're going to see another way that ASP.NET is very different from ColdFusion, and it has to do with ASP.NET's event-driven nature. A ColdFusion doesn't really have an event model, so it only responds to forms being posted, whereas ASP.NET can respond to everything that happens, like button clicks, field value changes, and other user interactions with the controls. So let me show you a quick example of how this works. I want to respond to a user clicking on this add button. So I need to add an event handler that I can put code in that will insert the user's data into the book table. Okay? All I have to do in design mode is double click on this add button, and Visual Studio goes to the code behind file. Page itself was bookadd.aspx, so the code behind file is bookadd.aspx.cs. And it automatically creates for me this event handler, this button click event handler. Okay, so whenever the user clicks this add button, the code that I place in this event handler is going to fire. And I'm going to use this to insert a new book record containing the form control values into the database. So the first thing I need to do is go up to the top and add a using statement that lets me use the methods in the SQL client library. So, and here's a little something called IntelliSense. I'm going to hit a dot after this, and it knows what's available for me, and automatically knows that that I'm dealing with system.data, and it gives me all the things that are available inside of there, which one of which is SQL client that I need. You're going to see IntelliSense used a lot more in this. You're going to find it's a very useful learning tool as well. Okay, so and now I'm going to go ahead and paste in the code, so I save a lot of time here. We have to save as much as we can. So what I'm going to do is take this method here. This is my code. And I'm going to add it to the click event handler. And so let me go ahead and unpin this guy here. Okay. So let's go through the code one step at a time and show you how this compares with ColdFusion. All right. I know it seems really foreign to a lot of you, but here, let me also unpin these guys real quick. I know this looks really foreign to a lot of you, but just bear with me, and I think you'll see it's really not all that bad. Everything is strongly typed in .NET. So whenever you create an object, you have to declare what type of object it is. So for example, this connection string is of type string. And I'm going to make that equal to the result of this statement here, which basically is, you know, the configuration manager is a class that has a connection strings collection in it. And just like collections or structures in ColdFusion, I can address the key or the item inside of that collection that I want. Now, if this were ColdFusion, and let's say that I had a component method called configuration manager, if inside of there was a structure named connection strings, all I would have to do would say connection strings square bracket mail.com connection string, and I would get back the string that I want. But collections in ASP.NET always contain objects, rather than just like simple values. So what I can do, and you're probably looking at this thing, well, how am I going to remember all this syntax? And I'll get to that in a minute. You really don't have to. Since the result of connection strings now.com connection string would be an object, and I want to really just get the string out of that object, if I hit a dot right afterward, IntelliSense kicks in, and it gives me a list of everything that I can possibly choose from that's inside of that connection strings collection. So really what I want is the connection string, which I already have there. Okay, so that's what this is going to do. It's going to return that actual connection string and put it into this variable, the string variable called connection string. I'm then going to use that in the constructor for a new SQL connection that I'm going to use when I execute my query. So I make a new SQL connection object named connection, and by calling new SQL connection and passing it this connection string that I just created. So now I have a connection. Now what I need to do is I need to execute a command over that connection. And to do that, I make a new SQL command object named CMD. And I do that by calling new SQL command. And this SQL command constructor takes two arguments, one of which is the statement that I want to execute, and the other one is that connection object that I just created. So it knows what I'm connecting to execute. Now that I have this statement in place, you'll notice that it's a parameterized statement. as, you know, at ISBN, at title, so forth. Now I have to go ahead and add those parameters in, because these are just really like placeholders. So in my command object, CMD, there's an object named parameters that has its own methods and attributes, methods and properties, rather. And one of those methods is the add method. So I'm adding this ISBN this ISBN parameter to my SQL command. Here I'm adding a varchar 20, and at this point, what I have done is I've added an empty parameter. So follow me on this for a second. If this is an empty parameter, and it's an object, if I want to give it a value, I would set the value property of that empty parameter to the value, the text, the value of the text property in that TXT ISBN web control. So that's basically how I'm assigning that value that the user enters into the form control into this parameter. So I add all of my parameters and go back to this connection object, open the connection. I then execute, it says execute non-query, which basically it's a query that's not going to return rows. This is just doing an insert. Then I close my connection. And then I do the equivalent of Cold Fusion's CF location. This is the equivalent of saying CF location to admin booklist dot, I guess, CFM. So that's basically what this insert's going to do. Okay. All right, let me show you one other thing up here. Whenever you're dealing with a string that has that you're not you don't want to really escape and you want to include carriage returns and so forth, if you put an at symbol in front of that string, it treats it as an unescaped literal. That's what that is. It's different from the at symbols in front of these denote these at symbols denote that they're parameters. Okay. All right. So let's go ahead and try this thing out. I'm going to go ahead and do a control F5, and hey, build errors. I did this on purpose. I wanted to show you something. So it says, do you want to run it anyway? I'm going to say no. Where was my build error? And this is one of the great advantages of ASP.NET 2.0. It says this name DDL book type does not exist. So I double click on it. It says, okay, well, it doesn't have a DDL book type. That's in the code behind file. So let me go into the actual form itself. And here's this drop-down list that I created. Okay, let me go ahead and pin my properties back out here and pin my Solution Explorer back out here. I click this item here, and you notice that the idea of it is drop-down list 1, the default value that it gave it. So if I say DDL book type, then Visual Studio 2005 pops up and even does the rest of the work for me. It says, okay, well, you had some references to a DDL book type, so it's now going to assume this value. So I'll click OK, and I'll try and go ahead and run this thing one more time. And there you are. So let me go ahead and add one. Let's say, call this one ABC, and title Having Fun with Coding, Authors, Jervis, and the Guys. I don't know. What's the average price of a computer book now? $59.99. And we'll go ahead and add that. And there you are. Okay? All right. So let's go ahead and add another one. Let me go ahead and... And let's do one here. Let me put something that's really long in here and kind of a dumb title. Let me put a string where a number ought to go and go ahead and click Add, and it says, bada bing, I got a raw error page. So what I'm going to need to do is I'm going to put a little structured exception handling in here. So let's go back and do that and go into the code behind file here. And let's talk a little bit about how this would be done, say, in Cold Fusion. Okay, so if I go to the book add action, and actually I don't have it on here, but normally what you would do is you would take all of this and wrap it in a CF try, and then you have a CF catch in there for catching either any error or a specific type of exception. But try catch in other languages, it's a little bit different, not too much different. Basically, your catch is not nested inside of your try; it's outside of it, and what we're going to do here is we're not going to put everything inside of a try construct. We're only going to take those things that are likely to to throw an exception during execution. I don't need to put any of this inside of a CF try, or inside of a try, because basically if I have a problem with this, it has to do with the loose nut behind the keyboard, namely me. But if somebody tries to put a value into a parameter that doesn't match one of these, that can throw an exception. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to say try, okay? And I'm going to go ahead and wrap all of this inside of CF try. That's another beautiful thing about Visual Studio 2005, automatically indents and formats everything for you nicely. Then after that, I'm going to say that I want to catch, and there's IntelliSense popping in for me, and I'm going to catch, go ahead and put my structure in there. I'm going to say that I'm going to catch and just a general exception, and I'll call that exception object EX. All right. So now what I want to be able to do is if the moment there's an exception thrown up here, that basically what happens is it stops execution at that point and transfers control right down to the appropriate catch block. Okay. So what I want to do is instead of redirecting away, I want to stick on that form and I want to display a label that basically says, you had an exception here and here's what the exception was, and basically please try again. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go back to my form here. And I'm going to go ahead and add another label onto my form. I'll make this one pretty wide. Give it a nice red color and make it bold so people can see it. And I'm going to go ahead and name this thing LBL message. All right. Now back in my code behind file, in my exception here, what I'm going to do is I'm going to say that LBL, and see, IntelliSense popped in. It knows exactly what I have access to. LBL message. Dot, and I'm going to take the value of the text property from it, and I'm going to say that's going to be equal to let me see, exception was thrown. Oh, I can't type today. Okay, and then what I want to do is I want to put the actual exception message on there, so I'm going to say concatenate that with, and my exception object is named EX, so concatenate that with EX. Let's hit dot for IntelliSense to pop in, and I'll take the message property. So that's what that's going to do. And the next thing I want to do is an LBL message. I want to set the visible property of this thing to true. Now, what I need to do to make sure it doesn't show up all the time is back in my form, I need to set by default the visible property of this to false. So when it initially displays, it's not showing. So let's go ahead and try this thing one more time. Okay, and let me refresh it just to make sure everything's there. Okay, let's see. Test, and let me leave the rest of them blank. As you remember from the database schema, they're all required columns, so this ought to throw an exception. And there you go. Input string was not in the correct format. Okay, so let me go ahead and put them all in. It wasn't in the correct format. Okay, so if I let's see, so it's nice to be able to have that exception handling show up instead of having a raw error message. But what if I do something like put in a number that's too big? You remember that the data type on this was like a numeric 6, 2. So if I put in something that's too big, then it's going to tell me that specific exception message, the arithmetic overflow error. So I mean, it's really nice to be able to develop this quickly. Okay, so hand in hand with exception handling is it goes validation. I put the exception handling on the back end of this thing first. So, because if I did validation first, I wouldn't be able to easily throw an exception on the back end. It wouldn't get that far. So let's go ahead and add some validation here. I'm going to go ahead and pin my toolbox out here. And Cold Fusion. Let me go back to Cold Fusion for just a second. Let's talk about some of this. Here's a typical Cold Fusion form. Now, a lot of Cold Fusion developers I've talked to really don't use CF form. We don't use it because though it does provide some rudimentary validation and so forth, it's not really all that flexible, so most developers I know, probably most of you, roll your own. But this is as close an equivalent to what's available out of the box in ASP.NET on the Cold Fusion side that I could find. So by a combination of using CF input and specifying whether it's required or not and what kind of error message you want to throw, and using the old hidden field technique, pardon me, that shows that certain things are required, you can have some sort of rudimentary validation in cold fusion. But in ASP.NET, it's much more robust. What you can do is you can use the validation controls that are available in Visual Studio. And so, for instance, if you remember from the database schema, all of these are required. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and take a required field validator, drag it out here, and I'm going to go ahead and say that the control that I'm validating with that is TXTISBN. And I'm going to say that the message I want to kick up if there is a validation error is I want to say must enter in ISBN. Okay? So now, just to give you an idea, let me go ahead and just try this and show you. Refresh one more time. So let's say I go ahead and try and add this. It won't submit it at all, because at least on this one column, on this one field, I have this required validator saying you must enter an ISBN. So if I enter an ISBN here, and we go ahead and reduce that number down to throw an exception, then it'll let that in. So what I want to do is I want to go ahead and put required validators on all the other columns, except for the drop-down list, of course, because that's always going to have a valid value in it. So on this one, I'm going to go ahead and validate the title. Say must enter a title, and the required field validator, oops, for this guy is going to say must enter at least one author, and change that control to validate to TXT authors. There. Uncoordinated today. All right, this one's going to be for price. And the message for that. Let's say for this one, you must enter a value between 0 and 999.99. Oops, 999.99. That's as much as it can take for the size of the data in there. All right, so at this point, you should be able to save, Control F5, and show this thing up. Oop, had to refresh it. There you go. There's everything right there. So if I start putting in these guys here, now notice something, though, is I haven't put a number in here. Even though my validation for my required validation, actually, let me go back and do something here. I'm kind of getting ahead of myself. That's not the message for that. You must enter a price. That's for the required one. Okay, one more time. Okay. All right. So basically, there you go. So I can put in some values here, and I'm putting a string where a number ought to go. And though I have entered my price, it's going to throw this exception and be caught here with the structured exception handling. So what I want to do here is I want to have some more validation in force. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to put a range validator on that price field as well. So for that range validator, what I'm going to do is I'm going to say that here's what I'm going to say: you must enter a price between 0 and 9999.99. Okay, and I'm going to go ahead and say that the control that I want to validate again is TXT price. I'm also going to have to choose what type of comparison I'm doing, and for this one, I'm really doing a kind of a currency comparison. So let me save and Control F5. And okay. So I'm going to enter a price, and now I'll go ahead and I'll try and put in. Oop! I forgot one other thing. Sorry about that. Actually, I have to give it the minimum maximum value. Only live, gentlemen. So, okay, so now if I satisfy all the other requirements, it says I have to enter a price between, that's what I say, -3. Again, it won't let me do it. If I say that it's $13, however, then it lets me add it. and delete this other one up here. Okay, so there's our $13 book. Okay, now one other thing that's that we can do is you'll notice that when I displayed this and had a validation error, that let's see, which one is this book ad? Hold on just a moment. You'll notice that the validation error appeared out to the right. It's easy enough to fix. All you need to do is see how the display says static? I just changed that to dynamic. And what will happen is, now if there's any kind of an error with that, it'll snug up right next to the right of it. Okay. All right. Now the interesting thing about this is that the validation that we put in here is both client side and server side. So it will validate it both. If they have JavaScript turned on, it'll perform client side validation as you saw, and if JavaScript is turned off, it will of course not have client side validation, but the server side validation will kick in. And it still would not even get to the structured exception handling to kick in and say that, hey, you know, this is a bad entry. So the validation objects in ASP.NET 2.0 at least cuts your effort in half for doing validation. Now there's a lot more that you can do other than just required and range. There you can apply regular expressions. You can compare one value to another. You can have a custom validator with your own code, with your own logic in there. And you can also have a validation summary that basically takes any of the validation errors that might be happening, summarize them up into one list, and display them all at once. Okay, so that's basically an insert form. We can go ahead and speed things up a bit by if we want to make an edit form, we can go ahead and just copy this thing. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and copy this add form, and I'm going to tell it to paste this in here. Just rename it. Book edit. All right. Let me go ahead and close these guys here. And I'm going to go ahead and call up book edit. Go into design mode. Okay. And just a couple of things here. First of all, you know, the text on this is going to say update. And the idea that ought to be BTN update. And likewise, if I go back into the ASP source behind here, we'll find that there is it's going to be addressing, even though the name of it now is button update, it's still addressing the old button add click event that we had in the add form. So I'll just change that to button update and click. Go back into the designer, and I'll go into my code behind for that book edit and change it here as well. BTN update. All right. Okay, so now to make things a little more convenient, I'm going to go ahead and add hyperlinks to the grid view control. Let me call this back up, go into design, and back into my smart tag, edit columns, and I'm going to add a hyperlink field. And what I'm going to do here is basically have it to where the header text on this is going to go over to the add form. So I'm going to just actually put some HTML in here. href equals... and add.aspx. All right, and the text in that column is going to say edit. And let's see. For the field that I'm going to be passing for this, going to be the ISBN, and for the value of the, I'm sorry, for the format string for this thing, it even gives you hints on how to do this. What I'm going to do is on the edit, I'm going to have that target the book edit, that ASPX, with ISBN equal to, now that the curly brace, the zero curly brace refers to the first parameter passed, since counting starts at zero in C sharp. So what that should do is it should give me the ability to, refresh, should give me the ability to go over to the add form And likewise, it should give me the ability to edit an individual record. Now, it doesn't show up here yet because we haven't added the code to retrieve that, but at least we have this in here already. All right. Okay. So I'm going to save some more time by putting the proper update statement in through cut and paste. So look at it, update. And let's take this. Paste this over the insert command. All right, and there's one more thing that we need from here is we have a separate parameter now. Now, let me explain about this. Since we have a primary key that's editable, and it's possible that somebody might change it, we have to persist the original value of that key. And so what we're going to do, and I'll explain a little bit more of this about this later, we're going to persist this in what ASP.NET calls the view state. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to basically take what was put in the view state and pass that to this old ISBN parameter that'll be used in the where clause to update the book. And I'll get to that in just a second. Okay. So let's take a look in this code behind up here, and you'll notice there's this unused page load event. Let me go ahead, event handler up here. And what happens is every time a page loads, this load event basically fires. So what happens is since ASP.NET, unlike ColdFusion, ASP.NET typically posts a page to itself rather than posting like from a form to an action page. What we have to do is we have to figure out, okay, well, is this person displaying this form for the first time in the browser, or is this displaying as the result of somebody clicking an update button and then it posts? Now, what they let you do in ASP.NET is they let you test for whether it's in postback mode. And the way you do that is you just do a simple test for if not is postback. And there's my IntelliSense popping in. So if not is postback, in other words, if it's displaying for the first time in the browser, I want to run the code that's going to retrieve the record that I'm going to use to populate those form controls. A little more cut and paste action. And basically, I mean, this is all what you've basically seen before. And so what this does now is it says, okay, make the connection string, make the connection, make the command. And then here's where we start to use the view state a bit. It basically takes the equivalent of url.isbn, which in ASP.NET 2.0 is request.querystring.isbn. Okay? And it basically puts that into the view state object old ISBN. Okay, so now it's persisted in between different requests. That view state, actually, if you look in the source code, you'll find like a hidden field called view state that has an encoded version of this information in it. So later on, when the click event fires, when they click on that update button, we can pull the ISBN value out of view state using toString and feed it to that old ISBN parameter that we use in the where clause. Okay. All right, let's check my work here. All right, let's give this thing a whirl. Go ahead and save it. And let me call up the book list and Control F5. And now what I want to do is I want to see if I roll over, you'll notice at the bottom of the screen it's showing that ISBN equals, so I should be able to pop this up and voila, there you go. So if I want to increase that to $18.95, then I should be able to increase that to $18.95. I mean, that's pretty straightforward. Even with the time that's taking, I know so far we spent about an hour, but even with the time it's taking to explain all of this, that's pretty rapid stuff. Okay? So, all right, what I'm going to do now is go ahead and create an excruciatingly simple catalog and cart. Okay? So, I'll tell you right now, this catalog and cart are created only to show you a couple of other ways to use data binding in ASP.NET 2.0. Catalog is pretty straightforward. It's just another grid view that's going to show what's currently in the cart. But the cart itself is really just there to show you a different way to bind data and want an excuse to play with a little object-oriented programming here. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and create a catalog, ASPX, another web form. It's called catalog. Choose master page, go into design view. right? And what I'm going to do is I'm going to drag a, let me go ahead and pin that in there. Go ahead and drag a grid view back onto the form. And what I'm going to do is make another, just quickly just go through this and make another one called book table, connection string, custom SQL statement, and let's see, query builder, take both tables, and choose the columns I want, sort by title, bada bing, bada bing, bang, boom, and at this point, go into edit these, change this over to type, and all right, so far, here we go, pretty cool, all right, so what I'm going to do now is I'm going to create a detail page that's going to display the details of the book, see if we want to add it to the cart, so I'll add a new item called detail. And what I'm going to do now in design mode is I'm going to drag a details view out onto this page. Okay? I'm going to wire it up to the book table. And I'm going to provide a where clause that uses the value of the ISBN that was passed in the URL to the detail page. So again, I'll make another one. Okay. And what I'm going to do from here is take all this information, and in the where clause, I'm going to say that it's going to be ISBN equals, and where I'm going to get that is from the query string, similar to the URL in ColdFusion, and I'm going to say that the parameter on this, let's say that the parameter on this is an ISBN. And I can test my query here, and let me see if I can put an ABC in here. There we go. So that works. All right. Now I'm going to go ahead and add a button. And I'll call this one Add to Cart. And make that you can add. Okay, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to double-click this thing, and you remember what this does. This makes an event handler in the code behind file. And so what I'm going to do is, since this cart is basically specific to the user, and it has to persist through his entire session, we're going to put this in the equivalent, the rough equivalent of ColdFusion session scope. We're going to use the ASP.NET session object. So in ColdFusion, I'd most likely create an array of structures to contain the items in the shopping cart, with one array element for each item in the cart, and the structure in each array element would contain the key value pairs that represent the properties of each cart item, like ISBN, title, price, etc. But arrays in C# are not resizable, so we can't use those for a shopping cart that grows over time. ASP.NET 1, version 1 introduced the ArrayList object, which did enable growth, but the contents were not strongly typed, therefore you had to do a lot of casting to type when it came time to use its contents. In ASP.NET 2.0, we now have generic lists, which give us the flexibility of growth as we need and the protection of strongly typed content. So I can create a generic list of book objects and then use that as the data source that I bind to my shopping cart. Okay? So before we start coding the button click event handler, we need to create an app code directory. And we need to create the book class. So I'm going to go ahead and say add new item. And I'm going to create a class called book, from which book objects will be instantiated. Okay. And what I'm doing is I'm creating a book class whose constructor is going to take an ISBN value, retrieve the corresponding book record from the database, and then populate the book object's properties with those values. I know this is going to look a little foreign to folks, but kind of bear with me. It's probably going to make sense. Okay. First thing I've got to do is I've got to make sure that I've got my SQL client in there because I'm going to be using calls from that library. Next thing I've got to do is I've got to add the private fields and the publicly accessible properties that I'm going to use inside of my my book class. Now, what these mean, where it says private string ISBN, this means that it is only accessible from inside of this class. So if anybody tried to access this underscore ISBN field directly outside, they just couldn't. They couldn't even see it. Corresponding to this private field, I have a public property called ISBN that has getters and setters. So if somebody just says, basically, you know, whatever my book object name is, dot ISBN, with this capital ISBN, basically what's going to happen is it's going to be calling the set, set method or the setter, and take whatever value that it's trying to assign, and in turn assign it to that private field. Likewise, if somebody wants to get the value out of whatever the object name is, you know, dot ISBN, then it'll call the getter. And you've probably done a lot of this when you're, you know, something similar to this when you're creating cofusion components that you, say, make stateful cofusion components in the session scope. Okay, so now that I have those, what I need to do is make my constructor. And so what I want to do here is I'm going to overload this and make it to where I can pass in a string, the ISBN, and the stuff that I'm doing inside you're already very familiar with. Let me copy that in. So in my constructor, whenever somebody says new book and they pass in an ISBN, let me go ahead and unpin that. When they pass in the ISBN, then basically all the, you know, making the connection string and the connection and the command and everything that you've seen before, it's going to take that ISBN and pass it into this parameter for at ISBN, which it then uses in the where clause. Okay, and then what I'm going to do is after I read that data, I'm going to cast these to strings and cast to decimal and integers, and I'm basically populating those properties of this particular object with those values. And I'm just making the quantity one for simplicity here. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and save this. And what I'm going to do is now say build site. Actually, let me force a mistake just to give you one of the ideas. I'm going to go ahead and make that all capital there because everything is case sensitive in C#. Let me go ahead and try to build this thing. And you'll notice it comes up and it says ISBN does not exist. If I double click on this and saying, you know, what are you talking about? Where is that coming from? So until I correct things and make them compilable, I can't even get to run my code. Now, you might think that's a hindrance coming from the ColdFusion world. And you know, it says build started down here and build succeeded, so now I'm ready to go. You may think that's a hindrance in coming from the ColdFusion world, but believe you me, when you're able to get rid of about 70 or more percent of the exceptions that could ever be thrown by an application before it even has a chance to run, you'll really like this. Okay, so basically, let's see, creating a shopping cart. Okay, so I want to go back to a little cut and paste here. Okay. Right. So, back in my, I'm sorry, I have to get rid of my details. Ah, let me get back to that. Sorry about that. Okay, so here I am. Oops, got the wrong thing there. Sorry, guys. Okay, let me add this using clause in here because I'm going to be using generic lists, so I have to add that using statement. And all right, so what's going on here? So what happens when I click add to cart? Well, first thing that's going to happen is I'm going to check and say, is there a cart in the session scope? In other words, if it's null, I have to create it. Now, what am I creating that from? Well, I'm going to make a new generic list of books. And so what I basically am doing at this point is I'm creating this new empty list of books in the session scope, ready to be populated. So once I have that in the session scope, I can take it back out of the session scope, cast it as a list of books, and create a local variable that's of that type named cart that I can work with. Now, without going into too much detail, basically what this is doing is, since everything that you put into a collection is an object, any object that you put in there, it can really be of any kind of object, you have to tell it specifically what kind of object it is when you pull it back out if you're going to put it into another variable there. So what I've done is I've created a generic list of books called cart, and like all generic lists, it has an add method, so I can add an item to that generic list. Now what I have to add to it, since it's a list of books, is I have to add a book object. And so what I can do is I can add that by calling new book, and then remember we overloaded the constructor to pass in the ISBN. So I can pass in the equivalent of in ColdFusion URL.ISBN, pass that into my book constructor, that will return a book object that it retrieves from the database and makes properties and so forth. And then once that's in the cart, I simply redirect over to the cart. Okay? All right, and it finally goes back over to the shopping cart page, and we'll create that in a moment. Okay, but first I need a way to get to this details page. So back in the catalog ASPX, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and make a hyperlink column. Okay. And I'm going to go ahead and do this all through properties. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to say that the text of this is going to be detail. And down here is where I'm able to pass things in the URL. So I'm going to go ahead and say that it's the ISBN is the URL field, and the format of this as you see is simply going to be detail.aspx ?ISBN equals curly brace 0 curly brace, which is the first parameter that's passed. Okay. Right. Now, okay, finally I can get to creating this cart page. So let me go ahead and add a new item called cart. Go over to design. And what I'm going to do now is I'm going to go ahead and make the cart be yet another grid view object, but this one time it's going to be a little bit different. Okay, this time because we're working with an object that is coming out of the session scope that does not have an actual method for us to call the pop to bring back a data set. The object itself is the data set. I'm not going to be able to use configure data source for this. But what I am going to be able to do is I'm going to be able to go ahead and specify what columns are out there. So I'm going to go ahead and add the bound fields for ISBN. And have the data field be ISBN. I can't even find them at that point. I gotta specify myself. And this one will be title. And authors. And price. And type. And quantity, because remember we added a quantity quantity property to the book class. Okay. And take off auto-generate fields because I'm doing it specifically here. All right, so there's that. Okay, now I'm going to drag a label out here and stretch it out, make it a nice deep red, make it bold, and I'm going to set its visibility to false, because I don't want it to display unless I specifically need to, and call it LBO message. All right. So, then in the code behind, okay, in the page load event, what I'm going to do is I'm going to test to see if this cart exists in the session object and display a message that the cart is empty if it doesn't. Okay, and if the card does exist, I'll go ahead and set the data source of the grid view control programmatically to be the book list and then bind it. And that part's really only two lines of code. I'll show you what this is here. Where is it? There we go. So it's basically, again, since I'm dealing with generic lists, I have to add this using statement so I can get access to those methods. And here is my page load event. So again, I test to see if the session card exists or not. And if it doesn't, I go ahead and say your card is empty and then show it. If the card is not empty, then basically what I do is I take that card out of session, cast it as a generic list of books, define that as the data source for the grid view control, and then with one line of code just say data bind, and that ought to do it. So let me go ahead into the the book list here, call everything up. You go into the shopping cart, let it compile up. My card is empty. I go into my catalog, and let's say I want to look at the detail for, here's a good book. Oh, look what I did. Let me go back in and play with this a little bit. So I go back into detail. I want to go back and see all of this is here and configure my data source. Ah, there we go. ISBN, coming from query string. No. I'm sorry. What? Silly me. Try that one more time. Okay. There we go. So let's say we want to buy cardiothoracic surgery for dummies, add it to the cart. There it is. Catalog, buy this unintelligible thing. There it is. So I know this is kind of convoluted to in an order just to show using a generic list of objects as a bindable data source, but that's basically what it is. I know that we didn't have a whole lot of time. Right as I said, it took about an hour and 15 minutes to run through all this, and we're running a little bit over, so I had to kind of run through things a bit rapidly. I hope I didn't rush too much, but I hope that what you're taking away from this is that getting to some truly usable code. The truly usable application in ASP.NET 2.0, if you're just using the built-in features of it, it's really quite rapid. It's not that bad. If you had kind of a recipe book in front of you that had how to do different kinds of queries and how to set up add parameters to the command and so forth, believe me, it would become second nature in no time at all. So sure, some of the things are radically different from the way that you develop in ColdFusion. But it's really nothing to be afraid of. Every time you push your own envelope, it's at least a little bit scary, isn't it? And that's really part of the growth process. And in this industry, it's either grow or go. So just think of learning ASP.NET 2.0 and C# as an evolution of your skill set. And as a little plug for ourselves, if you'd like to immerse yourself in ASP.NET 2.0 and C# for a solid week of very hard work and come out the other end with skills that you need to develop production quality apps, then consider taking our course that's oriented toward ColdFusion developers. You can find that at productivityenhancement.com. Just click on training when you get there. And so I guess without further ado, I'll go ahead and hand this back over to Miriam. And thank you very much for joining me.
Well, thank you very much, Adam, for presenting for us today. I apologize to everyone if we ran a bit over, but we needed to, of course, finish the demo that you all like to watch. All right. As Adam mentioned, if you do have any questions, please go ahead and submit them via the Ask button right now. We have time to take a couple more questions. The recording of the session will be available in 24 hours at the same site that you registered for this session, and that is www.learn2asp.net/campaign.asp. So we'll try and have this available within the next 24 hours. There are more webcasts coming up at www.microsoft.com/webcast. Please check them out. If you have any webcast content ideas, we'd be happy to hear from you. Please contact us using the URL listed for you on the screen. And today's session was brought to you using Microsoft Office Live Meeting. You can try it yourself for 14 days free of charge at www.microsoft.com/presentlive. I'm about to launch the survey for the session. Please know that if you do fill out the survey, your name would be entered for a drawing for a portable 40-gigabyte MP3 WMA player. We give 10 of those away each month. There's a good chance that you could win. Please do join us and for our next session tomorrow, same time, same place. And please take some time and fill out the survey for us today. Special thanks to Mr. Adam Church for presenting for us today, and to Andrew Duffy for answering the questions while Adam was presenting. Adam, any last-minute tips or tricks?
For tomorrow, what we're going to do is take the work we've already done, and we're going to refactor some of it for reuse, where we move these methods over into actual classes, and we're going to make a custom user control, use that as well in the forum. So hope everybody joins us tomorrow.
Great. And it looks like we got two or three more questions and the Q&A manager. Did you want to go ahead and address those?
Okay. Let's see.
I can take care of the survey questions.
Yep. Okay. So there's a survey. Somebody should make future webcast suggestions. Is somebody suggesting to make the future webcast suggestion website something mnemonic? And where's the survey? Other than that, that's it.
Okay, well, I'm going to go ahead and put the survey up just now in the questions and answers. It's up, but I'll put on the URL for it as well. So if you're not seeing the survey, you can go ahead directly to this site that I just posted. And thank you for your suggestions as well.
All right, well, thank you all very much.
And we'll hopefully see everyone tomorrow, same time, same place.
Join us.
Yes, thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's MSDN webcast. At this point, please disconnect from the audio portion of this conference. Thank you.